Welcome back, everybody. This is Channel 9 Live at Live at the Bellagio at Deaf Connections, and this is a special episode we're doing of Silverlight TV Live with a great or not so great community guest panel that we've gathered together. List of characters here. So basically, the way this is going to work is it's just a regular Channel 9 Live episode that we're going to be doing. We're going to be taking in Twitter questions as you go through. If you have questions, please tweet them to @Channel9Live. That's @Channel9Live. If you have any bad questions, treat them like this, please. And then we'll take all those questions in and we'll ask these gentlemen, and I'll let you introduce yourselves, starting right here.
Hi, I'm Ward Bell, VP of Technology at IdeaBlade. We make a product called DevForce that helps you move data into your Silverlight applications.
And you are a Silverlight MVP, correct?
That's what they tell me, yes.
All right, my name is Dan Wallin. I'm with the Wallin Group, and we specialize in Silverlight and also SharePoint, but we do training and a lot of development work.
And you're also a Silverlight MVP, correct?
Like Ward, so I hear, yeah.
Excellent. So which one of these is not like the other?
Ooh.
Oh, Silverlight.
No. And we have another MVP in the end here, right? So, Sean?
My name is Sean Wildermuth. I run Agilitrain. We do the Silverlight tour, the Windows Phone tour, and the MVC tour, training around the world, really. I'm not a Silverlight MVP, and it's a sore point with John. I'm a data MVP.
What's a data MVP?
It's an MVP in the data programmability group.
Oh,
so
excellent.
All the stuff that is on the other side of the wire from Silverlight.
So the one thing this whole group has in common is they're all MVPs, and they're all community guys. These guys all do presentations. In fact, I think Sean and Dan are presenting just about every hour this week at Dev Connections on a variety of Silverlight topics. Ward was in the keynote this morning, did quite a good job there as well.
Excellent.
But these guys have done a lot of line of business type applications, training, speaking. So I wanted to get this panel together for Silverlight TV to kind of talk a little bit about what you guys have seen out there in the real world, talk about the experiences, and we can answer a bunch of questions from these wonderful peers. So you guys do a lot of Silverlight work, right?
Indeed, we do.
We do.
Excellent, excellent. Let's start with taking a couple questions. We've got one here from @AndreAbrantes. How can I check if an application in Silverlight is using GPU resources? Who'd like to take that?
Anyone a GPU expert here?
Sean?
It's actually a plug-in parameter. You can tell it to, if GPU is enabled, you can actually see this through, and I'm trying to remember the name of the attribute, but it is...
You're saying this on the HTML object tag?
It's on the object tag, yeah, the HTML object tag. There are three options that let you track different things, like cache visibility, and the one that will give you the frame rate will actually show you whether the GPU is running. You'll actually see the frame rate instead of in the bottom of the app. You'll actually see it as an overlay over the app, and then you can know that it's using GPU.
I think there's something else you have to do for out-of-browser, too, isn't there?
There's a checkbox for that.
Yes, in out-of-browser there's a checkbox.
Yeah, but in out-of-browser you can't turn on that flag because you don't have control over the object tag. So you're kind of stuck testing it in the browser.
Yep.
Excellent, excellent. Good stuff. So we have a second question here from @QuillNux. I think I'm saying this right. What other devices will we see support for Silverlight 4? Will there be non-phone or non-TV consumer electronics? How about a toothbrush? Has anybody seen one of those?
I think that'd be awesome, man. Animated?
I'm looking for a Silverlight toaster myself. I'm in the market if anybody has one. Or a Silverlight jacket.
That would the jacket. And since you brought the jacket up, Ward, I just wanted to say, this just in. Ward Bell's now announcing his new line of clothing that you can all purchase so he can get his nice smoking jackets.
Okay, next question.
So silver lining.
Yes, there is a silver lining.
Yes.
So we have another Twitter question from @Aditya Voletti. Is there a template example for RIA services using class library plus Prism, MVVM, and data transfer objects? That's a lot of templates going in there. So basically, I think what the person's asking for is they're doing a lot of RIA services with Prism, maybe model view model, data transfer. Is there some kind of a template or example that they should be following? Maybe Sean, could you?
I have a RIA services plus MEF plus MVVM example up on my blog, wildermuth.com.
That's wildermuth.com?
Yeah, wildermuth.com. It doesn't use Prism, but it could be adapted pretty easily to add Prism. I think DTO objects are evil, so it doesn't include those.
Right.
Well, I actually have something called the Prism Explorer, which would be all of that, except that you would swap out RIA services and you would put, guess what? Idea Blade's DevForce in that slot because we do take a somewhat similar approach. Hey, it was a setup from them. I didn't even write the question.
There you go.
But if you want to see how these things all interoperate, that's one of the places to go, and you will see a lot of interoperation like that. I don't think you should go and expect somebody to issue you, or you should avoid anybody who issues you some grand template that you're going to lay in there and the whole application is going to fall out. We've been that route before, and that's not a good route. That's snake oil.
I think it's a great point, and I know all three of you are strong proponents of using MVVM in one way, shape, or form. And I think the one thing we've all agreed on in the past is there is no one single way to do MVVM. I know you probably all do it differently than I do it. And so in general, it would be a good thing to have an MVVM template that kind of puts everybody in a certain pattern, or how do you feel about that?
I think it's good to have a starter because, you know, as an example, if you're brand new to Silverlight, you may or may not know that, you know, the iNotify property change, it's a heck of a lot easier to have a base class, and maybe if you give that base class and let them fill in what they want. And
so there's some common things for MVVM
just
that you could
reuse. Just a little mini foundation, not a big platform, but something just to get you enough that you're dangerous, and then you can customize.
Okay,
because
great.
I think otherwise, like Ward was saying, if it goes too deep, it's like snake oil. Because it just there is no one-size-fits-all.
There's actually two out there. One, Laurent Bignon, which I'm sure I'm mispronouncing, Galasoft.ch, his MVVM Lite actually has templates,
right.
Not for project, but for item templates.
Is the MVVM Lite toolkit
yes.
you're referring to? Okay.
And Blend 4 has an MVVM template.
Right out of the box.
Right out of the box,
which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And it's a very, and I think it follows the pattern you're talking about, Dan, where it's not everything in a specific way, but it's a very good starter.
Yeah, and it doesn't use any particular underlying library. It's really kind of a raw implementation so people can...
But it gets you out of the box, away from the code behind spaghetti code type.
I think one of the big things that I haven't seen, because I know Ward's been talking about it, you, me, Sean, Laurent, is the sample data issue with MVVM.
Right.
And providing some type of way for people to not only follow a good architecture, but at the same time in Blend or in the new, the CIDR or the Visual Studio Designer, have a way to easily see, because, you know, when you have a list template, list box, it's almost next to useless unless you have sample data.
So I think what we're determining here is you three have got a lot of architecture experience with Silverlight-type applications.
Yeah, so maybe some in the audience should back off a little bit, and because MVVM is one of those things that can really intimidate people.
It sure can.
And I think it's important to just sort of dial it back and say, I think that there are so many frameworks, because everybody's trying to figure out the best way to go about something, but I think everybody's agreed to the same thing, which is that it's not a good idea to have all of your code in that one big view. And so MVVM is a way to say, you're going to get in trouble if you do that, but the first thing you do is yank it out of there and have all of the code that you're really coding to, all the programmatic code, in some other helper class, and the view in the left hand, and this class here, and they bind. Once you have that idea rooted in your head, then you can begin to engage with the different nuances of how to do it.
Right.
That's
right.
A good point. I think the reason why this has come up is that in WinForms and even to some respect ASP.NET, it's very hard to know when you were doing view code and when you weren't.
Exactly.
And because of the declarative nature of XAML, it becomes more obvious. If you're writing code behind your XAML, you better know that it is view code. It's a lot more obvious because you're doing so much non-code-wise, but really declarative using XAML. If you start to write code behind that, it should be the thing that makes you stop and think, does it belong here?
Right.
Animations would be a prime example of where it could belong.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
And there's a number of cases where you have to write code. I'm not a zealot about new code behind.
And while I love the topic of MVVM, before we get too tied into this, because I know four of us have had long conversations.
Yep. Yes, we have.
We'll get back to some of these questions over here, too. It seems we've got another question up here from Mohit Bhargava. I'm going to terrorize these names today. By Windows Auth in SL4, I mean native authentication from client without calling a RIA service.
Yeah,
I think they're missing some,
but natively in Silverlight, we obviously can't get to the username, but there's techniques such as init params is a good one, Sean mentioned earlier.
Yeah, to pass parameters in, sure.
Because they're looks like native without calling a RIA service. So the way I've always handled that, I don't know, you guys can chime in, is I pass the username in through the init params typically,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll get to that in the app you know, app.xaml CS.
I usually avoid security altogether and just...
But that works too. Yeah. Just security by obscurity.
I think you should secure the application way later when you're... When you're finally ready to deploy.
Absolutely.
Or call a web service. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Okay, we have a really interesting question here for Ward Bell from Beth Massey. Can I say that on air?
Oh, goodness.
Can Ward Bell be my bleep? What data feature would each of you want to see in WCF data services to make it easier to do server-like development? We'll start with you, Ward.
Oh, well, I'm so nonplussed by the question.
Yeah.
That I'm completely knocked out. Thank Beth. So I'm going to let my friend Dan pick up from there. I want to be your pimp, though, Beth, because I know what to do with you. I really do.
That was awesome.
I would argue about Ward that no one knows what to do with Beth Massey.
good point.
Okay, so the question is, what data feature would you like to see in WCF data services, basically meaning Astoria, to make it easier to do SQLite development?
I know for me, I use some backend frameworks where I can't necessarily share class libraries easily with SQLite. And so what will happen is I might use data services for one piece, but then I might choose to use WCF for some of my more involved operations. And the problem I know I've had is there is the option when you create the proxy to share, but it only works if you can truly share the class libraries. It'd be really nice if when you generate it, if it could detect specific classes and avoid the duplication. I don't know how that's going to happen, but hey, you guys are smart at Microsoft, so
sure,
make it
we'll
happen.
We'll do that tonight, yeah.
Okay. But I know that's been a big problem with us is we've ended up having to have maybe bigger services than we wanted because of not being able to type share. And I don't want to go into the details of why, but we'd get duplicate, you know, product classes.
It'd be nice if there was structural mapping. So if the classes were in every respect the same except in name.
Maybe. Except the namespace, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a product that does structural mapping?
I don't know. Is there one?
Well, I thought maybe DevForce.
No. We don't do it that way. We don't do it that
really
way.
You really walked right into it.
I do. I should have done that.
What?
Actually, in a way, we actually do, but no. The other interesting part of that question, though, was should you use data services for SL development? And my question is, what kind of SL development? There's certain kinds of SilverLight development for which that would make tremendous sense. And there are other kinds where I'm not so sure that that's the case. And maybe you guys have an opinion about when one kind of application seems more appropriate.
Well, if I can answer the question first, and then I'll give you my opinion about that.
I think we can allow
it. Now you did it.
The thing I really want out of data services right now is parity. So right now, if you look at the kind of three ways to get at data, they all three overlap with benefits. And unfortunately, probably the biggest one is RIA services has validation attributes and neither WCF services or data services have them.
Right.
In the same way, I'd like RIA services to support projections.
We do that too. Keep coming.
So I'm a big fan, as everybody knows, of data services. And I think as long as you're choosing the right security scheme, it's a pretty solid way to do your data access. The place where it really falls apart for some organizations is they want to be able to define at a procedural level what data someone can have access to.
Exactly.
And that's where data services falls apart.
When you've got just CRUD-based applications, you've got a model you just want to expose, Astoria or data services is really easy to use.
Yes.
It's great for your application.
And it's a different philosophy. Other than having really defining the operations you're going to do like you would in some ways in RIA and certainly in WCF services, it really allows you to get away from what I call method pollution. And that is where you start with the four CRUD methods in a WCF service, and then you come back a week later and there's 100.
Yes.
Because everyone's written their own. And that's a problem that's a problem that I think data services serves really well. So
yes.
The consumer can decide what data they want in what form, shaped in what form they want, walking down what relationships they
want. Right, it doesn't kick out those four methods for every single type you're moving, right?
Right.
And I see that as a problem with some of these other services as well.
Well, let's move on to some other questions here.
I mean, John, if I can ask, there was one we skipped. There was a good one.
Did we skip one?
Yeah. Sure. Or it slid down. It was about something to the effect of what is meant by Office Interop.
By what, sorry?
Office Interop.
Oh, Office Interop, yes.
With SilverLight. And that happens to be one we're doing a lot with. So
Oh, you're talking about comm the automation.
Comm automation.
And elevated trust.
And elevated trust. So is it all right if we address that real quick?
I'm sure you can, since the Twitter board is scrolling fast.
Yeah, there it was there.
Okay. It's right there in the bottom.
Can we do Office plugins?
Well, that's a different one. There was another one. But anyway.
Can you answer that question, Dave?
I will answer that because I like that one. Yeah, so, you know, as everybody knows, Silverlight 4 has the automation factory, which, yes, it is Windows specific right now. But I know for us, our current big customer on a project we're on is very Excel oriented. And so almost everything they do is based on the concept of, hey, we need to export to Excel, we need to import.
Right.
We have the drag drop features now, drop target.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the question, I just caught the end of it, was related to what do we mean by Office Interop. And basically what we literally mean is we can interop with anything we want as far as COM interfaces go. And that means for Excel, you literally can make it so that when your application is, let's say you export to Excel, you can even detect when Excel changes and update your Silverlight interface.
Right.
It goes both ways. So we've seen some demos there. So anyway, I wanted to get to that because that's a good question.
It's good. An out-of-browser. We actually have, that's a good lead-in, we have an out-of-browser session, I believe, later today at 2 p.m. with Joe Stegman, where he's going to be talking quite a bit.
Cool.
About a lot of the out-of-browser features. So save a lot of your questions for those on Twitter as well. And again, we're getting a lot of questions in, but if you have any good questions for us or this panel in particular, at Channel 9 Live, and we're here live again at the Bellagio at Dev Connections. So we'll skip to some other questions here. We've got one at the top for...
Can I interject something real quick?
Could you interject?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Dan, you said that the Automation Factory only works as Windows specific, and I would argue that the Automation Factory will create any COM object on a Mac.
That's true. That's
there
true.
Are yes, none.
It but it won't do AppleScript.
There are none.
But it won't do AppleScript. So.
But any COM object that's installed on a Mac, it will work with.
That's cool. Good. So I think Sean is saying he's going to be writing some COM
that's
objects.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one.
I'm porting COM
great.
Over to Mono, yeah.
That should. I'm really looking forward to that feature. But. Yeah.
The other thing that within that, though, the dynamic keyword, I mean, just to be able to talk to Office now.
With a late binding.
It's a big deal.
That is a big deal because what, you know, and default parameters, what a big deal that is.
It is.
Absolutely.
Be a lot nastier code.
Okay, so we got lots of questions that are piling up here. Arseny92, how about DX11 and SL4 and .NET applications?
No.
DirectX? No. That's it?
That's
there is none.
There is none. There's no 3D stack. There's no...
Yeah.
I mean, you could, in theory, go through the COM stuff to get to DX, but
right.
You won't.
You wouldn't want to do that. What about Boulder or the augmented reality type code flex applications?
You could do that. I just had someone after the session I just did ask me about, they need to just do a basic 3D product scan. And that's exactly what I say. Go check out Balder or one of those, you know, 3D. It's not built in, but there's
some
guys that are
pretty smart. That's written by one of our new server languages, Einar.
I don't know how you say the name. Yes.
Sorry, Einar, I'm sure I've killed your name on this. I apologize.
So on the phone, because you have access to XNA, you could do it easier.
True, through XNA, not through Silverlight.
Correct.
Well, okay.
You can call XNA from Silverlight, so yes.
True. Using a phone.
As long as you're on the phone.
Hey, you said Quilmux correctly, John.
Quilnux? I
or
did.
However you said it was right, apparently.
Awesome. So. Oh, I did. Great. Quilnux. What changes are made to Garbage Collector in SL4 for optimization and performance? Yes, you are saying Quilnux correctly. Thank you very much for that confirmation. So as far as Garbage Collector goes in SL4, are there any optimization or performance improvements?
You know, Garbage Collector, I don't know. I know the XAML parser has been significantly upgraded, and I know the number that's touted by Microsoft a lot, and I'm sure it depends on the situation, is 200% better performance.
And speaking of performance, I mean, have you guys seen performance improvements with Silverlight 4? You've been using it for private builds ahead of time?
Ward?
Well, you know, it's only anecdotal. I haven't hooked it up to anything, but my sense is that it is faster. But mostly I'm more concentrating on the new things that it can do than how fast it's doing it.
There's just a few of those, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, at this stage, that's really where we're concentrating.
So speaking of the favorite new features, let's start with Sean. What's your favorite new feature, Silverlight?
Favorite new feature. That's a really good question. Probably the new data binding stuff, which I think
new data binding features. And so what
Me
kind
too.
Of stuff in data binding do you really like?
Well, sure.
String format, fallback value, null value. Those
the
are
the markup
pretty cool.
binding extensions.
Yeah. The built-in commanding for button base is a big deal.
That's nice.
Let me think about those are the big ones. Because they just they eliminate a bunch of these places where people were building 400 converters.
Oh, yeah, there were so many converters and applications.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Dan, what do you think?
My number one favorite feature is string format, which
you
is probably
the
Sean most simple. But I got more. You know, honestly, some of my favorite ones, building apps for clients, you always hear the stuff that's maybe missing. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggies that's maybe not touted as much is the built-in scroll bar mouse support. So, you know, a data grid, a list box, you just sit there and now it just works. Whereas before, we always had to attach like a behavior
right.
or some custom attached property
mouse
or whatever.
To,
yeah. So that one's, it's simple.
The little things.
But it's a big deal to me. You know, other than that, let me think. There's several. I know for out of browser, we have to show some SQL Server reporting services stuff. And so although the web browser doesn't work when you're in browser, it works very well out of browser. And so it's going to be really nice to be able to just overlay that web browser over an existing screen, as an example,
right.
and pop up that report that they could just print right from there because it's, you know, it's a web browser type thing. So that for us is a big deal. I don't know. All the things I'll name would be line of business.
Line of business oriented.
Stuff.
Yeah, I was going to jump in with a line of business one, too, which is since we all appreciate the binding, but I have to get this right. iNotify Data Error Info.
Yes, very good.
INDB, I the acronym I don't remember. And the reason that that's important is that a lot of the UI controls have heretofore been listening for you to throw an exception when you validate some user input and don't like it. And most of us feel that throwing an exception inside our setters is not a wise maneuver.
It's
but
bad.
It was all that was, it's all we had available to us.
Right.
And particularly in an async world, that's the great thing about iNotify Data Error Info, is that I may not know the answer about whether this is valid or not. I'm going to have to go make a server trip. And then when it comes back, now I can signal to the UI, yes, it's okay, or no, it's not.
Right.
And so that's a wonderful extension to it. And so I think that you're going to see the effect of that show up in business apps a lot more.
Great, great stuff.
And the interface, because it's based on data error info,
means you can finally do object level validation, not just field,
not
just property based.
Yeah, you've got object level, meaning you do cross property validation as well.
And Sean won't toot his own horn, but in the Dev Connections magazine last issue, he had a good article that covers both those interfaces. So
good.
I read it. Good job.
Thank you.
You can read. That's excellent.
Yeah.
So. Enough pot shots at each other so far. So let's just start jumping to some other ones. Now, I'm Maxless, at Maxless, Silverlight is enabled in Windows Phone. Yes, that's the answer. But it's a good lead into our schedule for the rest of the day here. I believe after this we have an hour break, which we have some pre-recorded content. And then we're going to come back at 2 with Out of Browser with Joe Stegman. So save your questions for Out of Browser. At 2:30, Windows Phone 7, we have Orville McDonald from our Windows Phone team. So we have a whole half hour dedicated to answering questions about Windows Phone. And then at 3 o'clock, we have a member of the Expression Blend team with Arturo Toledo. He'll be on here talking with me about Expression Blend and the design toolbox features that are out there. And then back at 3:30, we're going to have a customer panel with three gentlemen who were in the keynote today, Ward Bell from IdeaBlade. We have Dave Wolf from Synergy. And we also have Frank, and I'm forgetting his last name, who was also in the keynote as well from Ormetis. So it's a good schedule lineup today. We got 5 minutes left. Let's see how many more questions we can get through. Andrea Brontes, can we share some visual components like chart between Silverlight 4 and WPF?
Share is an odd word there because they have implementations in both toolkits. So
but not
right.
Yeah.
There are controls that work in both, but there are different, implementations.
Right.
Okay.
Different binary.
Yeah, the sharing between Silverlight and the desktop is purely non-visual right now. So creating something in Silverlight and sharing it with the desktop is...
Have you tried that, Sean, and how's that working?
It works well for business logic. It does not work well for anything visual, like I said. So it has to have some semantics for the for what you can share. And what I've been doing is writing validation in Silverlight and then sharing the assemblies up. And that's worked pretty well. So you write it once, and it's not code gen, so you know you're actually running the same code in both.
Right, places. And then it's much easier to do unit testing in the .NET world. Although the Silverlight 4 unit test framework is really coming along. I've been using it.
It's getting better.
There's a good question down from Mohit Bhagarva, I believe. Can we do Office plugins in Silverlight 4 now, like writing Outlook plugins, which can be auto-updated from server, unlike install plugins? Something I'll jump in with on here is, yes, you can do this, and I think there's actually a product. I'm struggling with the name right now. I believe it's Red Critter, maybe?
I've seen that.
There's a product out there, a small startup company, who's actually doing something like this using Silverlight, which Tim Hewer is the one who put me onto that, actually. who's doing something similar. So yes, you can do these types of things with Silverlight 4.
Well, and for any plugin, you know, I won't go into frameworks, but it's pretty easy now to dynamically download your Zap and
right,
plug anything
Meth,
you want
example,
in, like
or, yeah, or even Prism or any of those.
Exactly.
So let's go to a question from Anton Vidishev. Any GPU acceleration in Silverlight 4 for the Mac?
Yes, just like Silverlight 3, but the Mac being the Mac means there's no GPU acceleration in Safari. Firefox, it does work, but only in the browser.
And it's because of the way the browsers are implemented.
It's because of the way Safari is very locked down. They don't allow hardware access to anything.
And what if you're in full screen mode?
I don't think that's changed. Someone will probably correct me after this, but
I don't know.
I don't think that's changed.
So let's keep moving on some of those questions there. We've got Victor Grippy. Is it possible to expose WCS service that reasserves code, Jens, as an exposed endpoint for a third-party line of business user? Trying to digest that one. Is it possible to expose a WCF service that RIA services code generates as an exposed endpoint? Oh, okay. So they're trying to expose a RIA services web service, I believe.
Well, I know that there are a lot of demonstrations of reading a of consuming a domain service as a WCF service, but I don't have any direct experience of what that's like.
Yeah, I haven't played with that particular feature.
Okay. Well, that's a valid answer as well here. So let's answer. I think we've got 2 more minutes left. We'll answer a couple more questions. At PadCom, what kind of tools exist today outside the MS Server stack, like Java, that can interop with Silverlight?
Well, I know Eclipse has a plugin that you can build some Silverlight apps.
Sean, didn't you have a session? Was it last year?
Yeah, last year at Mix, I did a session. It's supported on the Mac. It's okay. It's not great. It's okay. It can get you there. But as far as if I'm a little confused about how to answer the question, because interoperate, it's pretty simple.
Yeah,
because
that's a broad word.
It's just an HTML plugin, right?
And so, if anybody's interested in watching your session or Mix, all those Mix 09 sessions are still online, I believe.
Yeah, I believe
so. You can check that out.
So
we have another good question up here from Larry LA. Can I request Huey Lewis sing my favorite song?
Oh, dear.
I have to assume they're talking to you, Ward.
Yes, I think so. Just remember, it's hip to be square.
Do that, the Back to the Future one.
Yeah.
Excellent. And on that note, I think we're going to
thank we're out of here.
Guests for coming on board. Thank you,
for
Dan, Ward, and Sean.
Thanks,
all for coming in. Come back. We'll be on a break for an hour, and then we'll see you again.